Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
It's been a strange Christmas this year. Just weird. Not bad, just different. I'll tell you the story here real fast. We had been planning to sell our house and move to a different home here in this city. We're not leaving town or anything, but just a few things about our home. Although we really like our house, there are a few things that have become frustrating for us, mostly in terms of space and storage. Kitchen's a little bit small. Storage is a challenge for the pots and pans. And I've got a lot of gear, you know, camera gear and whatnot, and light kits and all this stuff. And I don't have a lot of great places to put everything. And so just a configuration, a slightly different house, maybe a few square feet larger. We've been kind of in the market, have been looking. So we prepared our house to sell, which is a huge endeavor. And it's kind of weird to do it at this time of year. Not a whole lot of people sell their houses around the holidays. They usually wait till after January and the weather warms up and everything's behind them. We decided just to go for it. And so we just undertook this major endeavor. We went through and updated everything. And we dragged the paint cans out of the garage and touched up all the paint and did some scraping and painting on the exterior, had the carpets cleaned. We boxed up a bunch of stuff, went from room to room to room, in through the closets, grabbing anything and everything we didn't need immediately. We wrapped it up and stuck it in bubble wrap and wrapped it in sheets and put it in boxes and taped up the boxes and labeled the boxes and put everything in the garage. And we took weeks to get the house ready to go. We decided to list with a realtor. That was a whole conversation in itself. Do you sell by owner? Do you hire the realtor? Geez, I don't want to pay the commissions, but at the same time, I've never sold a house by myself before. Do I want to fool with it? Do I have the expertise? What if something comes up? So we had those conversations, finally decided to use a realtor. I'm not even sure that was the right decision, but we just took the leap, signed the paperwork. We were one day from having the sign, the for sale sign, in the yard. One day. It was a Saturday. The sign was going up Monday. The ad was going to release on Monday. The photographer was coming out Monday, and those pictures were going to go up like Monday night and Tuesday. We were right on the cusp. And after all of that, after all of it, we looked at each other and thought, I don't think we're ready to sell this house. Maybe there's some other options we could explore without having to sell, blah, blah, blah. Before you know it, we call the realtor and we call the whole thing off. Sorry, please don't bring the sign to the yard. Please bring our key back. We're not going to sell. I'm sure she hates my guts. It probably happens quite a bit, you know. But anyway, there's a point to all this. The byproduct of us preparing our house to show and to sell is that we didn't put up any Christmas decorations. Because when the photographer was going to come out, we didn't want those photographs to be dated. We didn't want to have the Christmas tree and the garland and the wreaths and all the Santas and all that stuff all around. And then the house still be listed in January and February, and it's displaying Christmas stuff. We just decided not to. So we left all of our Christmas tree is still boxed up in the attic. We've got this big, I think it's about a 3-foot Santa, kind of an ornate Santa that we always bring out and display. We've got a fireplace wreath with all these lights on it and stocking hangers with bells. No, we've got a whole bunch of stuff for Christmas. We put it out every year. This year, it's just sitting up there in the dark in the attic. We haven't brought one Christmas decoration out. So here we are in the shadow of Christmas. Do we rush up to the attic and drag everything out and put everything up only to take it down almost immediately? Like, is it worth it? And so we're looking at each other thinking for the first time in our lives, and it would be for the first time ever, we would have a Christmas that wasn't really Christmas. We didn't have anything Christmassy. We have very few gifts. If you don't have a tree, where do you put those? Played a few Christmas songs on Pandora. That's the extent of our Christmas. It's just been odd. It's been a weird year. Of course, I am sure that many in my family, had they realized, had they heard that we did not celebrate Christmas this year, would say, well, it stands to reason, you know. You know, Seth's an atheist. Why would he celebrate Christmas? Actually, they're not sinister like that. It's just, these are some of the thoughts I know many of them have. These are the types of conversations that in the past have been articulated by some members of my family. I think I mentioned once last year, was it last year, the year before I was talking about, was someone on my family tree who would ask why I would even bother to be married. Why would Seth even get married? He doesn't believe in God. After all, marriage is a union under God, consecrated by God. If you don't believe in God, why would you ever do that? Just this arrogant declaration of ownership of an idea, a union between two people. It's just pathetic. And quite often this happens when it comes to the holidays. I produced a whole video about how atheists can, and if they choose to, should, if they choose to, celebrate the holiday on their own terms. It's called Christmas Behind the Curtain. I was going to play it for you again this year, but I think I did it last year. You can find it on YouTube. Just go find it. Christmas Behind the Curtain. It's 15 minutes long, and it explains how and why atheists can and do celebrate the holiday, and that's great. Great for them. And the short version is that Christmas is a great number of days or dates or occasions that are named after gods. The gods of various mythologies, whether it's Janus, the god of January, or Mars, the god of March, or Thor, the god of Thursday, or Saturn, the god of Saturday. Do you believe and worship in any of those deities? Well, you better not say, have a great Saturday, then. And a huge number of the traditions that people consider to be sacred on the Christmas holiday predate Christianity. They come from different religions or practices or mythologies, different roots, not Christian. It's just pathetic. I'm a little bit teed up anyway because I was just shared a link from a Facebook page called, I'm pulling it up now, the American Center for Law and Justice. And this was posted on Facebook on December the 15th. It's a slightly older article. And it has a photograph of American coins, the penny. And it says, "In God we trust." And the American Center for Law and Justice declares, "We defeated atheist attacks against In God We Trust in federal court. But now the atheist group is filing an appeal. It's outrageous. We're ready to fight back. Sign and share our petition." The banner of this page is three crosses with the title, "Pray for Persecuted Christians." And if they're talking about the United States, my first thought is, you got to be shitting me. They got a church on every half block in this country. Most of the politicians elected to office claim the Christian faith in some form or another. You have the freedom to produce Christian material and make a profit off of it. People can wear their Christian t-shirts and their cross earrings and their cross and crucifix necklaces, and they can listen to their favorite Christian music on Christian radio stations, and they can put up Christian billboards, and they can do it, anything and be as Christian as they want to be in this world, for Pete's sake. They can put nativities with a baby Jesus. They can put crosses out. They can put a life-size Jesus out. We got Jesus statues everywhere. We've got Bibles in hotel rooms across the United States, although those numbers are shrinking. We got Jesus everywhere. We got the Bible everywhere. We've got Christianity everywhere. And yet these people chest thump and talk about how persecuted they are. And I think, what planet do you live on? Those atheists are coming after Christmas and Christ. It's terrible. So anyway, back to the coins. They had said that they were circulating a petition to keep In God We Trust on the money. Well, I made the mistake of scrolling down in the comment sections of this page. I'll tell you, if you want to see IQ points just vaporize, if you want to lose your faith in humanity, do that. One person said, "This is America's motto. If you can't live with it, find another country with a motto you like. We need to get back to majority rules instead of minority rules." Does this person have any idea what they just said? What if the atheists were the majority? Is that how they would determine what is constitutional? What if Islamists came here and we had Sharia law? What if radical or fundamental Islam was the majority in this country? Would they go for that? It makes no sense to me. The motto by someone else. The motto was around before they were born. If they don't like it, leave and go attack something else. I know you're, Y-O-U-R, entitled to your opinion, but sometimes it's better to keep your thoughts to yourself, lest you offend a majority of the people. Charlene said, that's ridiculous. It's always been and always should be on the money. A basic Google search would provide for this person accurate information about when In God We Trust was added to United States currency. In God We Trust not added to coins until after the Civil War, not added to paper currency until 1956? 54 or 56 from memory, as Congress voted it in during the Red Scare. Those evil satanic communists were frightening everyone, so they wanted to make a statement about Christianity in the wake of the USSR. In God We Trust, Under God, was originally on the Pledge of Allegiance? No, it wasn't. It was added in the 1950s as well. This information is easily discoverable for those who care to look. Someone else said, Satan uses whoever will yield to him and his workers don't give up as they wish to cause all the damage they can. A guy named Jim said, this issue will resolve itself. Eventually, all will be faced with the option, take the mark of the beast, a chip implant. There will be no money. They will scan your hand at Walmart. If you don't have a chip, you will not be able to buy and sell. You'll starve. Unless, of course, you are saved. The rapture will occur first and all Christians will be spared. It's a lot like first round bye and home field advantage throughout the playoffs. You cannot make this shit up. Go get another country, go find another country, go live in another country. It's over and over and over. Well, if they don't like what our money says, they can give up all the money they have and donate it to charity. Screw the atheists, they're in such a minority of the population, it's laughable. Let's put the question to a national vote. We are a Christian nation. Atheists, you will loose. We're not going to lose, we're going to loose, L-O-O-S-E. And if the atheists in this country were serious, says a guy named Jim, they would protest the federal government to remove Christmas from the federal holiday calendar. Why would I protest to remove Christmas? I love the holiday. I don't have to believe in Jesus to enjoy Christmas. The American Atheist billboard that went up a few years ago said it very well. Quite honestly, the things most people enjoy about Christmas aren't Christ. Even Christians, the stuff they really get into, the stuff that really rings their bell and resonates with them, the stuff they most look forward to and enjoy around the December 25th holiday, have nothing to do with Jesus. Hey, our kids are driving or flying hundreds or even thousands of miles to see us on Christmas. We can't wait for them to be there. We haven't seen them in months. It's going to be amazing. Let's make a big meal. Let's make sure we take plenty of photographs. It'll be so wonderful to see John or Susan or Tim or Carol or whoever. Our loved ones are coming and we get to hang out. What a wonderful time it's going to be. No Jesus required. Hey, Grandma's going to make her special sweet potato casserole. Oh, it's delicious. Sweet potatoes with butter mixed into it and some brown sugar drizzled on the top. And then they melt marshmallows, slightly roasted marshmallows right on the top. Then they serve it up in a big casserole dish and it is absolutely amazing. I love this time of year. Merry Christmas. No Jesus required. None. My favorite Christmas song is on the radio. My favorite Christmas film is on television. No Jesus required. And we'll warm ourselves by the Yule logs, pagan symbols. We're going to open our gifts, a pagan practice. And we're going to give and receive and make memories and enjoy time together as family and friends. No Jesus required. That's what I'm talking about. Now, for many people who are atheists, They're going into highly religious families, situations where there's a fundamentalist vibe going on. And in many ways, they feel like they're entering the lion's den. They, you know, they're waiting. They're waiting to see somebody drop the bomb. Somebody's going to say something uncomfortable, or somebody's going to put them on the spot or call them out. Or is there going to be an argument or judgment, or is all going to go well? Is it wonderful? Is it fantastic? Everybody on this date puts aside their differences so they can be a family. We're going to talk today about the heathen holiday. We're going to talk about atheists who go and enjoy Christmas with often fundamentalist families. And we're also going to talk about the holiday being celebrated as Atheists enjoying Christmas. That's what this show is about as we head toward the December 25th holiday. And all that, we'll kick it off here in just a second. You know, once again, it's been a crazy busy December. If you drive by the post office, you see these stacks of parked cars, and there's long lines and hustle and bustle and hassle and insanity. You know, people sending and receiving all kinds of stuff, letters, cards, packages, and they're doing it without stamps.com. And that amazes me, because once you have experienced the convenience of managing and printing your postage right from your desk with stamps.com, trips to the post office just seem like an unnecessary detour in your day. Using my own computer and printer, I can print postage for any letter or package instantly. And the mail person just picks it up. Voila. If it's a big mail out, I can arrange a special pickup for it. I'm done, right? And my workflow continues to actually flow. I've used Stamps.com for many years. They've been a year-round postage solution for me, and they're featured here because I think they'll be a great solution for you. And right now, when you sign up for Stamps.com with my promo code, Seth Andrews, you get a 4-week trial and a $110 bonus offer, which includes postage and your own digital scale. It just hooks right up to your computer. You never have to guess about how much postage you need. You can weigh it and find out right there at your desk. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and then type in Seth Andrews. That's stamps.com. Enter Seth Andrews. I ask our listeners on social media how they would handle the holidays with religious families. Rob says, ideally by not being in the same state as them. Tommy said his coping mechanism is to drink, all caps. Tanya said, I don't. She doesn't deal with him. She says, I'm an adult now. I get to choose who I spend my time with. Sharing similar genetic material means nothing. Joel said, in all honesty, we do a devotional with everyone, regardless of anyone's belief. To me, I love Christmas too much to make a fuss over anything. If it means spending the holiday with family, then that's more important to me. Well, Joel, who's the devotional to? Which specific God? I mean, if you did a devotional to something other than the Christian God or the baby Jesus or whatever, I mean, would that be a problem? Would someone else say, you know, I love Christmas too much to make a fuss over this? Because my suspicion is that someone somewhere is getting validated and everybody else is doing all the stretching to accommodate them. Mike said, we came to an agreement. Family time was for family. Brandon takes a harder line. I shun them. They're dead to me. Seven said, it's unfortunate the number of people who've experienced such ostracism and rejection from family. I felt it too. But I've recently discovered a trick that helps give believers a significant boost in tolerance to me. I welcome their prayers and validate their feelings on the matter, usually by saying something like this. Look, you believe in heaven and hell, right? That means you want me to avoid a fiery torture chamber for all eternity. Thank you. Think of all the believers who couldn't give a shit. You're taking the time and putting yourself in the uncomfortable position of trying to intercede and get through to me about avoiding a painful and terrible fate. That shows me you care. I sincerely appreciate it. No, I seriously do. I do not believe in your hell. Please understand that my lack of belief in it doesn't change how much it means to me that you put yourself in this position, especially when we're here at a family gathering, and try to save me from something dire. I'm not going to change my opinion about life after death, but please continue loving me by praying for me and trying. I will not reject your love. Now, pass the potatoes, motherfucker. What? I mean, I've used a version of this before. I mean, do you believe that God is all-powerful? Yes. Do you believe God hears and answers prayers? Yes. Do you stand on the promise of prayer? Yes. Are you praying for me? Yes. Wonderful. Knock yourself out. Pray for me all you want. I'm interested to see just how much faith you have in the power of prayer. Because if you genuinely believe that this concern is now in God's hands, there's no need to paw at me. There's no need to argue with me. There's no need to worry about me. It's in God's hands. I mean, I've gone there before. But this whole, hey, I appreciate the fact that you're pawing at me because you care, I have a little bit harder time with that, because they're still using a family gathering as a soapbox for their religious agenda. I mean, what if you reverse that? What if you showed up at Thanksgiving or Christmas and said, you know, I realize that you're spending your lives as adherents to obsolete and often dangerous superstition, but I'm going to intercede by presenting evidence and science-based arguments and promoting rationality, and I hope that you'll see this as a gesture of love and compassion. I mean, would they receive that from you? I kind of doubt it. Let's go to the switchboard. Area code 267, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. What's your name?
My name's Doug.
Doug, we're heading toward Christmas. Are you an atheist?
I am, yes.
And your family, are they atheists?
Not at all.
Okay. Well, tell me your story. Tell me how the holidays work for you.
Well, I was a Christian. I'm 51 years old now. I was a Christian for probably about 40 years. Then I realized that I just couldn't accept these things anymore. And I kind of hid it from my family for a while because I knew that there would be a negative reaction. But after a while, it came out. We had discussions about it originally, first of all, with my youngest sister. She's just 2 years older than me. And she's extremely religious, and she didn't understand. And I tried to explain to her that, I try to base things on what there's evidence for, things that are accepted scientifically, that there is good evidence and a good reason for me to accept something that's basically invisible and magic. And she couldn't understand that because she has that that religious mindset. But as time went on, it kind of just faded away as a conversation topic. But then when it comes to the holidays, it really doesn't come up that much anymore. They kind of just accept that this is where I'm at. They don't understand it. I think they're afraid for me because they obviously think that something really, really bad is going to happen to me when I die. But they've pretty much accepted it, and they know that trying to reconvert me, for lack of a better word, is kind of a futile effort.
Paint the picture. You're sitting around the table before they say the blessing. I mean, is it weird? What's it like there?
Yeah, it's really not weird. They do say a blessing every time, and everyone holds hands. I still do that. You know, I don't refuse. I don't, like, get up and leave the table. I still hold hands. I just don't bow my head and take part in the prayer. I just sit there respectfully and respect what they want to do. And when the blessing is over, we go on with our meal and our conversation. And it just isn't an issue for me. So I just kind of try to avoid it.
I get that. You're in somebody else's house. It's a mealtime prayer they want to do, whatever. And if it was in your house and someone had insisted, it might be a little different, right?
Then I might have to say, well, now, hold on a second here. You know?
How about an individual prayer? Pray amongst yourselves. You can say a private prayer. You know, I think you have the right in your own home to determine the temperature of your own Christmas celebration for sure.
Correct.
When everybody else is praying and you're not, do you ever get the vibe that someone else is sort of peering out to see what you're about? Are you a point of curiosity for any of these people?
I think maybe in the beginning, when it first came out, they were curious about it, my mom will do this thing. Like, I'm usually sitting next to my mom when we have dinners, and she's, you know, she's up there in years. She's well into her 80s. But anyway, that has nothing to do with it. But anyway, I'm usually holding her hand because I'm sitting next to her, and she always squeezes my hand during the prayer. You know, that could be like a, you know, pay attention kind of a thing, or it could just be on, you know, I love you, son, kind of thing. So I just kind of squeeze a little bit back and let it go. As far as what they're thinking about my worldview, about my thoughts on the religion, I don't really put a whole lot of thought into that. That's up to them. And if they have any questions, if they want to talk to me about it, I don't shun the subject. I just don't bring it up myself because it just, to me, it's not an issue.
Has it ever come up?
It has. It had, not at the dinner table, but it's come up, you know, private conversations between myself and my sisters and my mother.
How'd that go?
You know, it kind of like I make a lot of points. Like I'll talk about a lot of things in the Old Testament and inconsistencies, and you know, a lot of the things that we as atheists are kind of common knowledge. And they listen, and I think a lot of times I'll say things, and they're like, you know what, he makes a valid point here. You know, like one of the things I said to one of my sisters one time was, you know, I always go back to the flood. It's one of the things that I have a huge problem with in the Old Testament, one of the many. And I said, where is the goodness and where is the omnibenevolence in deciding to kill everything on earth when you, as a God, you literally have any option at your disposal? As the all-powerful creator of the universe, you could literally do anything you wanted to do. So where is the logic in murdering millions of people, and not just people, animals, plants, you know, basically destroying everything on earth? Then for what? To make a point that, you know,
now, this is usually where the religious people in my life look at me and go, free will, like somehow that's an answer.
Yeah, and free will. I'm like,
oh. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Doug. I'm sorry, I'm just flashing to a previous conversation. So they look at you and they say, hey, he's actually got an interesting point there, huh?
Yes. Yeah. I think I've said a lot, made a lot of points where they've kind of, it's kind of stopped them in their tracks and they think about it. But then I can relate to that mindset of, you know, always reverting back to, well, everything is God's plan. So, you know, even though it might seem evil to you and maybe even to me, even though I'm not going to admit it, God had to have had a good reason for it. And I'm like, okay, if God had a good reason for it, tell me what it is. You know, I mean, give me some of your thoughts. What might the good reason have been? Why wouldn't God go with another option when it came to, you know, the fall of man or the flood? He absolutely could have, but he didn't. So I would like to hear your reasoning as to why he didn't choose a different option. And that really kind of stops them in their tracks most of the time because they don't have.
Thanks
an
for coming, Doug. Sure, great to see you. We'll catch you next Christmas. Yeah, you know, it's funny as you're speaking. It's when we have these conversations in my own life. It always seems that the answers come back, and I get two different responses. Either the first response is whatever atrocity or insanity I pull out of the Bible, they're like, that's not in there, right? That's one of the first things I hear. That's not in there. And of course, you open up and show them chapter and verse and multiple translations, and it doesn't make any difference. And the second response is, well, it's moral because God did it. You know, God can do whatever he wants. He's God, kind of thing. So when someone has an emotional connection rather than a logical or reason-based connection to an ideology or a viewpoint, it's so much harder to break through and to have these conversations about the facts. And at some point, you just shrug and say, you know, next, and go on, live your life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when it comes back to what you were just saying, and they bring up, you know, morality, well, if God does it, it's moral, then my response to that is always, okay, let's just say for argument's sake, that's true, that it is actually moral if God does it or determines that this is the way it's going to be. If that's the case, then I choose to follow another set of morals, and that's my own, because I would never murder, I would never condone rape or slavery or harming anyone in any way. So To me, these are the morals that matter. And if your God has different morals, well, then I choose to not follow those morals.
It's yet another atheist who knows his Bible better than most Christians do.
Yes.
And he celebrates Christmas on top of that. You're just a guy. You're just a pain in the ass, Doug. I mean, you're causing all kinds of problems.
You see, Christmas for me, it's about family. It's about giving. It's about tradition. It's not about religion. That's how I see it, and that's how I'll always see it. And it means every bit as much to me now than it did when I was a child. It just means that much to me in a different way now.
Well, I appreciate your perspective. You're getting to spend the holiday with those you care about, right?
Absolutely. That's what's important. Yep.
Fantastic. Well, Doug, thanks so much for being a part of this conversation and part of the broadcast. I wish you and yours a Merry Christmas, and we'll talk again, all right?
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Seth, and you have a great holiday as well.
There was an article posted in Alternates by Amanda Marcotte, the 10 best things about being an atheist on Christmas. And she says this: by now, most people who aren't avid Bill O'Reilly fans know that the war on Christmas is nothing but a paranoid fantasy of conservatives, and that most, though not all, atheists and other assorted non-believers are perfectly happy with the continuing existence of Christmas. Sure, we may say happy holidays to reflect the fact that this is an entire season with multiple holidays in it. We may object to using the holiday as an excuse to push overtly religious songs and prayers on kids in public schools. But the Christmas holiday, despite its religious origins, is accepted by most atheists as a secular holiday, and many of us enjoy it as much as the Christians do. In fact, I'd argue there are many advantages to being an atheist when it comes to celebrating the holidays, so much so that you can have them here in checking it twice form. And she lists 10 things that are the best things about being an atheist on Christmas. Number one, travel flexibility. If the religious significance of the holiday matters to you, being with your family on Christmas Day itself is paramount. In our modern era, where families move all over the country, however, that means travel, often by plane. The problem is that everyone else is traveling when you are too, and usually during the first seriously bad weather of the winter, no less. Flight delays, tears, tearing your hair out, wondering if you're going to make it on time are pretty much guaranteed. Thing is, for non-believers, the exact day itself feels kind of arbitrary. So it becomes a lot easier to blow off the entire struggle to be with family on December 25th and just do Christmas at home. I visit my family the next month, when it's easier and cheaper. Sure, you miss out on a little of the holiday magic by staying put, but the trade-off of not having to endure the holiday stress is often worth it. And for little kids whose parents are divorced, being able to have Christmas on December 26th or 27th or 31st takes a lot of stress out of figuring out your holiday visitation schedule. Number two, no Christmas Mass. Christmas Eve is a wonderful time for drinking eggnog and playing cards and opening just one present before bed. Having to spend that precious time kneeling and standing and sitting and singing and listening to a priest drone on about Jesus' birth is a travesty. Luckily, we atheists feel zero obligation to show up for a semi-annual reminder to give a crap about our faith, as we don't have a faith to begin with. Number three, sex. Is it a sin to have sex on Christmas Day? Ask this poor fellow on Yahoo Answers. It's a concern many people have, it appears. This concern doesn't even occur to non-believers, though some of us do worry if we did make it back home to visit the parents about getting caught doing it in our childhood beds. Number four, creative decorating. People who reject religion tend to be skeptical of the whole concept of tradition. When it comes to choosing how to adorn your home for the holidays, that can free you up quite a bit from the standard nativity scene plus angel star on the tree business. Atheists are not the sort to get bent out of shape when someone suggests replacing old white man Santa with a penguin. Why not do your house up as an ode to Star Wars or Game of Thrones, or honor the Satanists who get holiday displays up at state capitals by doing a devil-themed Christmas tree? Or perhaps one topped by the flying spaghetti monster. How about creating a nativity scene with superhero action figures? No need to worry that it's blasphemy. In fact, the more blasphemous, the better. Number 5. Wrapping paper. An atheist friend of mine had holiday presents wrapped at the store recently. Christmas or Hanukkah paper, the cashier asked. How about one of each, my friend replied. They don't believe in either, so both are fine by me. A small pleasure, but a satisfying one. Number 6, give me the loot. While it's faded some as conservative Christianity becomes increasingly beholden to capitalism, there's still a lot of anxiety in Christian circles that the holiday has become commercialized and has drifted away from its religious origins. This can make the question of how much to give at Christmas fraught. Will too many presents distract kids from Jesus? How many is too many? For atheists, it's clear that buying a bunch of crap and laying around eating all day is the reason for the season. Well, hang on just a second. I'm not sure I buy that. Well, the article continues. So these kind of emotional crises about priorities don't really factor. Sure, atheists may decide to put a budget on the gift buying because showing love through material objects can spiral out of control. But if you want to give yourself a day just to be materialist and gluttonous, go for it. You're not going to hurt Jesus' feelings as you don't even believe in him. Number 7, no praying before the meal. Even in Christian families that don't pray before every meal, there's a tendency to feel you have to revive this tradition on the holidays. Worse, the duty is often handed off to the biggest blowhard in the bunch. And so there you are, your neck getting sore as you keep it politely bowed while your relative thanks God for everyone's promotions, marriages, and babies, and for the football team's winning streak. But when the atheists are in charge of the meal, you sit down and get to eating. No preliminaries necessary. Number 8. Happy Holidays. Once it was a completely non-controversial way to express a general feeling of goodwill to all during this time of year. Now this phrase has turned into a litmus test to see if the person hearing it is a frothing-at-the-mouth right-wing nut who hates atheists and any non-Christians. It definitely helps you trim down your list of people you feel obligated to be nice to. Number 9, better music. No need to worry about working some of those dull religious songs into the mix this Christmas. You can fully admit that All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey is the best Christmas song, full stop, without feeling it's somehow a slight to Jesus to elevate a cheesy pop song about romance to number 1 status. Of course, if you don't like Christmas music at all and the sound of sleigh bells annoys you, who cares? Open your presents to Motorhead if you like. When the holiday is about people, putting what makes people happy first becomes much easier. And number 10, better movies. Skipped out on rewatching It's a Wonderful Life for the 8th million time a couple years ago, though I do like that movie, and went to see Django Unchained on Christmas Day instead. That was a memorable holiday. The one big downside to being an atheist on Christmas, the eternal Santa debate. Most atheists have no intention of bringing their kids up to believe in God, but as many of them celebrate Christmas anyway, they don't know what to do about Santa. Some atheists worry that teaching kids about a magical elf who flies around the world bringing presents to well-behaved children is wrong. For the same reason they believe teaching about God is wrong, there's no evidence it's true. Others reasonably point out that since part of the Santa tradition is the great debunking, it's a useful way to teach kids not to believe everything people tell them, even their parents, which can perhaps inoculate them against religious claims. Everyone makes good points and there's no research settling the question, so it just gets debated over and over again every year with no real resolution. Clearly, the answer is go ahead and enjoy hoodwinking your kids about Santa. But if they don't figure it out by around age 5 or 6, tell them so they're not embarrassed by being the last kid in the class to know the truth. Sadly, knowing atheists, odds are low that no one will care a verdict has been rendered and the debate will rage on. Anyway, that is Amanda Marcotte, who wrote a piece for Alternet called The 10 Best Things About Being an Atheist on Christmas. Well, a few things I take issue. I don't know what to do about the Santa question. I do like the idea of raising a child with fantasy and imagination and the Santa myth. I think it can be a lot of fun. I don't think you screw a kid up necessarily by playing into the Santa myth. But there are those who think right at the very outset, even if you incorporate Santa and the Santa story into Christmas, you draw a big circle around it and you say, actually, it's all fiction. But, you know, I'll let you guys fight that one out. I don't necessarily agree either that Christmas is about getting stuff. Stuff is quite often a distraction from some of the best parts of Christmas, which I think are being with the people you care most about, making memories. Look, I know it sounds like a freaking Coca-Cola commercial, but that's how I feel about it. I mean, how many times has someone freaked out over something, some trinket they got from under the tree? Oh, it's the best thing ever. And 2 weeks later, it's discarded and it's broken and it's collecting dust. But you're still talking about a memory, an occasion, something happened, something was said, a moment, a holiday moment that you cherish and take with you forever. Those are my kind of things for Christmas. Those are the things that I look most forward to. I also don't think you have to say happy holidays if you're an atheist. I mean, the holiday is called Christmas. It's called Christmas. It doesn't mean I have to believe in Christ to call the day what it is any more than I have to believe in Thor to call Thursday Thursday, or believe in Saturn to call Saturday Saturday. These are days named after gods. The month of January is named after a god. The month of March is named after a god. It doesn't mean I believe in or worship those gods. I'm calling it by the name it's culturally known. Christmas. That's fine. Fine with me. And yet it baffles so many Christians that I meet when I say, hey, Merry Christmas. How can you wish me a Merry Christmas? You're an atheist. I just have to stop and explain it. Area code 412, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who is this?
Hi, this is Diana Clarion.
We're talking about heathens on the holidays. What's your story? What do you think?
Well, my family, such as it was not quite as overtly religious as, say, yours was, that sort of thing. They weren't nominal Catholics. They wore their religion as a badge, us versus them. So when I came out as an atheist, I got a lot of, well, you can't celebrate the holidays. You can't celebrate Christmas. You don't believe in God. You don't, you're a heathen. You don't believe in God, that sort of thing. They made it abundantly clear that in the world of us versus them, I was them in a big way.
So how did they find out you were a non-believer? Did you just come out and say it, or was it more of a passive discovery?
I did say it. I forget exactly how I did. It was in one of the monthly phone calls I would make to the so-called parents.
Now, why do you call them so-called parents? I mean, what's that about?
Okay, there's a long story with that.
Well, I mean, shorten it for our listeners. I don't want to go too deep into the rabbit hole here, but, you know, you tell me, all right?
They dumped me because when they brought me home from the baby store, they named me Edward. I'm a trans woman. They got rid of me because of that, and there's a lot of bitterness.
So you had come out as a trans woman and an atheist.
Yes, not at the same time. But atheist first, trans woman second. They did not get rid of me because I'm atheist. It was the other.
And do you do the holidays? Do you bother? Or have you disconnected?
Oh, absolutely. I'm stubborn that way.
No. Perhaps let me rephrase. Do you do the holidays with them?
Oh, no. No, they haven't spoken to me in 5 years. And that's part of my, that's part of how I deal with the holidays. The best way I've dealt with the holidays is I don't deal with them at all. I don't deal with those two.
Do you think if you had not come out as trans but were only an atheist, you'd be welcome?
Yes, I do. They liked to complain about my atheism.
How does that happen? Are you at the dinner table and you're eating Christmas dinner and they throw out the passive-aggressive stuff, or is it more overt than that?
Oh, it's much more overt than that. It's actual accusations with, you're a heathen, you don't believe in anything, why do you celebrate Christmas? Making it very abundantly clear that they liked neither that nor me.
All right, you're a heathen. Why do you celebrate Christmas, Diana?
Well, number one, it's the winter solstice, the return of the light. I suffer seasonal affective disorder, and the days getting longer, the light coming back is very important to me, and I celebrate that more than anything else. And I do hold on to some memories. There were some good times when I was a child, my babka, my paternal grandmother. I remember the way she would prepare for Christmas and Thanksgiving holidays, and I remember her that way.
Harkens back to the old pagan celebrations where they would see the days becoming longer, the return of the sun, the harvest was coming. And
absolutely.
This, of course, explains much of why Christmas is celebrated where it is, because much of it is borrowed from these earlier pagan traditions, you know?
Yes, and I even light a menorah, because again, that's connected with the light.
Yeah, but if they look at you and they see you lighting a menorah, they're like, what the hell are you doing? You're an atheist, and yet you're...
Yes. Several people have made that comment. Well, a friend of mine commented recently, you know, why do you celebrate Christmas? You're an atheist. It's not the deism, it's not the theism that does it for me. It's the symbolism. The 8 days of light, and gee, it's celebrated right around the solstice. I wonder how that goes together. I do it the same way. I just don't give it the religious trappings.
What would you say to somebody who was going through much of the same thing? You know, they've got maybe a varying degree of fundamentalist family out there who, even if they're accepted, there's an asterisk. You know, yeah, we accept you, oh, you poor thing. Yeah, we accept you even though you're wrong and stupid. What advice would you give from your own personal perspective if they were going through that? Would you advise them to take a hard as line as you did?
Only if they could deal with it. I mean, it was very, very difficult for me because it wasn't my idea to make the clean break.
They cut the cord with you. You're not welcome.
Yes.
Don't come.
Right.
That stings.
Yes, his last words to me were, you humiliate us. Hers were, goodbye.
And that's been 5 years ago.
Yes.
How do you sort of scratch the family itch? Tell me you're not spending the holidays without loved ones nearby.
Well, there is Sylvia, who is a cat. It's going to be her and me. I bought her a bunch of cat toys as a present, and she'll find out about catnip. Stubbornly, I will probably make another turkey this year and eat it for a week. Either that or I'll put Sylvia in it and let her eat her way out. She loves turkey.
Oh, God. Yeah. I've got a photograph of Kat standing over the Thanksgiving turkey, tongue out.
I saw that one.
Yeah, just perfect timing, you know, when the shutter just caught him. And I thought about submitting it, you know, hey, look, stock photo of Kat over turkey, but I just never did that. So.
Well, and I do buy myself presents, in a way, things I have needed or might want. I'll buy them. I'll actually wrap them up and put them under the damn tree.
Now, Diana, is this a forced isolation, though? I mean, have you reached out to people who might be going through much of the same thing, who could relate to you, who might be able to sort of help scratch the family itch? Because as I've often said, family is so often the family you choose. Or is that attractive to you? Would you rather not?
This is very lonely. I've tried reaching out, and maybe I don't know exactly how, because whatever I've done so far has really not been answered yet. People are too busy or other things like that. And I mean, I do have a couple of cousins who talk to me, and they don't like them either, but they're always busy. And we were supposed to have done Thanksgiving together, and that fell apart. So it was just me and Syl.
Well, you can decide how much you want to volunteer, but roughly, where do you live? I mean, what part of the country are you in?
I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay. After we finish this conversation, I'm going to see if I can pull some resources. And I'm not trying to force anything, but, you know, I certainly, in the age of the internet, there's a way to try to potentially connect people who might be in the same situation and really might enjoy a moment or a point of connection, whether it's on the holidays or otherwise. I don't know if you welcome that or not. But
I think that would be very much appreciated, because online contact, which I do have a lot of, the personal point is missing.
Yeah.
There's something about face-to-face that's much more satisfying than words on a page.
Well, I can't make any guarantees, my friend, but I've got a lot of friends, you know, and I'm fortunate to be in a position where I've received a lot of support from this audience in my own life, and I know many of them are eager to provide the same for others. So,
well, you don't need to make any guarantees. Just the offer is very, very much appreciated.
I want you to know that the holiday is yours. I'm glad you're making it what it is for you. I'm sorry about your mother and father, but, you know, I know there are a great many people out there who are so much more accepting, who haven't drawn the lines of acceptance in such a harsh way. You know, be like me, think like me so I can love you. They don't feel that. You know, they would yep. not only accept but embrace and celebrate the differences between us. And
that ladder was all I got when I was growing up. You know, be the way we want you to be.
And yeah, this isn't how we raised you is probably much of what you've heard.
Yeah, as a matter of fact. And I guess that demographic kind of has that attitude, unfortunately. He's a first generation. She's a second generation offspring of Eastern European immigrants. And there's a lot of that. Do it our way. Don't be an outsider. A lot of xenophobia.
We have a lot of reason to be encouraged, though, because the more I see the statistics, I mean, despite many of the headlines we're seeing, the more I see the statistics about the younger generations, we're seeing a greater degree of acceptance and celebration of diversity. And the tide, you know, it's shifting slowly, but it is shifting. And hopefully this
yeah.
world will be a much more accepting place for those who come after us, you know?
I envy the kids. I really do, because they are looking at a world hopefully a little better than the one I had. I'm 59 years old. And
you're just a young pup. You're just a young pup. So, is it okay if I wish you a Merry Christmas, Diana? I mean,
absolutely, all right. Absolutely. Yeah. And Merry Christmas to you. Happy holiday. All kinds of good
happy
stuff.
Happy Hanukkah with a menorah. I mean, all, whatever it is, just yeah, happy that. And hang on for just a second after this call. Let's you and I chat for just a few more. Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. Coming up here after the break. What if you're into nativity scenes, or you'd like a nativity scene, but you're not all that into, say, the baby Jesus? Well, there are some non-Jesus alternatives out there. Many of them are laugh-out-loud hysterical. I'm going to talk about some of these non-nativity scenes in just a second. Hang on. Thanks again for listening to the broadcast. Don't forget that our patrons get a completely commercial-free version of the broadcast. If you want to support the show on Patreon, the web address is patreon.com/SethAndrews. And thanks for your support. I'm scrolling social media, and I'm stumbling across all of these non-nativity scenes, and I just love them. Where people take Jesus and Mary and Joseph and the wise men and all the animals and they remove them and replace them with other pop culture icons. I saw a Star Trek nativity just a couple of days ago. Instead of Mary and Joseph, it's Will Riker and Deanna Troi. The baby Jesus is actually a fully grown Jean-Luc Picard. The wise men are Geordi, Data, and Worf. They did keep some sheep around, which is weird. It's, you see all these Star Trek characters and they're surrounded by sheep. It's bizarre. There's another one with Riker and Troi as Mary and Joseph. The baby Jesus looks like a baby unicorn. The wise men are all three Darth Vaders. There are a number of others in attendance, these posable action figures, many of whom I can't place. And looming over the entire proceedings is a T-Rex. And on top of the manger roof is Batman. he's got his cape is all flying outward and his hands are up, and that's the nativity. There was an article posted here just a few days ago in the Huffington Post about some of these different nativities, and I'll just go down the list of some of the big ones. There's a hipster nativity, and it shows a couple of young parents taking selfies over the baby. They've got their cell phones out. The wise men are these three dudes, hipster-looking dudes, that all have Amazon boxes under their arms and they're riding Segways. The animals, I just see two. One of them is a cow, and on the side of the cow is a stamp that says 100% organic. There's a zombie nativity. The characters have their eyes all X'd out, and they, I guess they're shambling toward the baby Jesus. The Huffington Post said perhaps it took place in Bethlehem. There's a rubber duck nativity. There's a meat nativity, where the baby Jesus and Mary and Joseph, the wise men, all the animals are made out of sausages and bacon. In fact, the roof of the manger is made from bacon. And in fact, the entire nativity is photographed sitting inside someone's oven. There are nativity cake toppers. There's a mermaid nativity. There's one made from Spam. The characters carved from Spam. There's a snow globe. There's one made from s'mores with the crackers and chocolate. Literally, the baby Jesus is a marshmallow lying on chocolate on top of a cracker. That's my kind of nativity. Someone made a nativity scene out of shotgun shells. Just painted them up. Shotgun shells. There's the baby Jesus. The shell is lying down or tipped over, and Mary and Joseph standing over it as shotgun shells. Carved from soap, there's a nativity of moose. What's the plural of moose? It's moose, isn't it? Moose nativity. They're all standing around this baby moose Jesus. There's a frog nativity. There's a meerkat nativity. There is a nativity made from tampons. I'm just going to leave that one out there. I'm just going to let you do with that whatever you want. But it exists. Okay, it exists. Back to the switchboard. Area code 217. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. What's your name?
Eric.
Eric, how do you handle the holidays with a religious family? Or are they religious?
Oh, they are. And normally everything goes fine. We had a little discord over Thanksgiving, so now there's kind of going to be the elephant in the room. But
well, are you comfortable talking about what happened? I mean, any details? Or
sure. It all started. There was this elderly lady, nice lady, that I come across in the grocery store here just before Thanksgiving, handing out flyers for a little church thing. And I overheard her talking to someone she was handing a flyer to about, you know, putting Christ back in Christmas and everything. And I had seen this lady a few weeks before Halloween and overheard her going to someone about how Halloween is so wicked now because the heathens and everything had ruined All Saints Day. And so when she approached me and went to hand me one of the flyers, I looked at it, and it had the usual symbols, the Christmas tree and the Yule log and all this. And I told her, I said, you know, you wanted to put the Christ back in Christmas, but, you know, historically, these are all traditional pagan symbols and everything, you know, that the Christians hadn't, you know, to about 300 years or so prior to that, they even recognized Christ in Christmas. And of course, I was called just about everything from I was called wicked, I was called a blasphemer and all this. And
she so said these things, of course, in Christian love, I'm sure. Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And otherwise, she was a nice lady, but, you know,
Beside the fact she was calling you all these names, she was a nice lady.
yeah. Well, prior to that, by the time you lose your intelligent conversation and go to name calling, well, the gloves are off at that point.
Yeah.
So I told her she was kind of in the wrong there because her book said that she's not even allowed to preach to me. So, you know, being a woman, she walked away. And I had posted about it on Facebook. And then shortly after that, I made another post about the whole deal with how pointless I thought prayer was. It had just so happened that right as I was writing that post, someone in my family had replied to the first post saying that they were praying for me. So automatically, when that post, the second post went up about prayer, it blew up that it was a personal attack, and everything just escalated from there.
How is your posting about prayer as an idea, as a notion, as a concept, a personal attack?
Well, I had started out that while I personally appreciated the thought behind saying they would pray for me, that I explained that just a few days prior, I'd gone through the same thing with my mom because she had asked, well, if you have it in the mind for you, you know, I've got this medical thing coming up, and if you pray for me, and I said, well, you know, to me, that's kind of like writing a letter to Santa or pleading with the toaster.
Now, wait a minute. She knows you're an atheist, and she asked you to pray for her?
Yeah, yeah. Well, she said, if you have the mind to. My mom's dealing with this okay. It was my sister who kind of went off.
You know, it's difficult for someone on the outside to gauge intent, you know, if she's genuinely in a moment of desperation physically and she's just seeking help and she's like, look, if you would, you know, it would comfort me. I mean, but if it's one of those things where she's coming after you knowing that she's asking you to betray your own mind on this issue and she's using her own medical crisis as a cause for that, well, that's something totally different. And only you can probably really gauge that.
Yeah, well, I knew she was just looking for some comfort, and she knows that humor is how I deal with things. And
yeah, good for you for not being an asshole, right? I mean, I appreciate that. Yeah, choose your battles.
No. That's right. That's right. That's why I told her, you know, about it meant the same thing as, you know, the writing a letter to Santa or pleading with the toaster. And that lightened the moment.
Well, I mean, some people might have thought that had kind of a high asshole factor. I love it myself, I think. You know. But right. After the social media commentary, obviously many of those people in the wings who are watching you, family members who will see you at the next holiday gathering, I gather?
Yeah, probably. We're still kind of debating on whether or not to even deal with it.
Oh, you're thinking of opting out altogether, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it that bad?
I just think there's always going to be that thing right now, and I'm going to calm down a little bit, but I just think there's always going to be that in the back of their minds. This whole thing happened thinking I was waging a personal attack on them when it was just a matter of bad timing.
Well, I appreciate your perspective, my friend. I hope things do work out for you in the next several days before Christmas and you get a chance to have some sort of a reconnection, if that's possible. But happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and thanks for being a part of the discussion. Much appreciated.
Oh, I appreciate it very much. It's been a pleasure.
I'll finish the broadcast today with a story, and a little Christmas story. I don't know if it has a point or a moral or anything like that. I just thinking about it. Let me just tell you the story, and then you can sound off. You can chew on it and express yourself, your own perspective and opinion about it all. We were out a couple of days ago running some errands. Very cold weather striking a good portion of the United States, and Oklahoma is no different. Temps in the teens, wind chills near zero, very cold. And we exit the highway right off of 71st Street. There is this area where commonly you can see people out there who are bundled up in whatever they have. And they have signs that say, please help. You know, lost job. Homeless. You know, need money. Medical bills. Whatever. And almost all of those signs at the bottom say, God bless. And people are driving up, and they're rolling down their windows, and they're giving him a few bucks. I have in the past been cynical about many of these people. I understand that there are a whole lot of destitute folks out there who are, I mean, they genuinely do need help, and this is how they get it. So it's not that, but I was taken advantage of once in my own life by someone who was sort of presenting themselves as a destitute person. Back when I worked in radio at Clear Channel, it was 4 a.m. I was heading in for the morning show, and this guy was standing out in front of a convenience store. And he walks up to me and spins this story about his car, and he has no gas, and he needs $20. And I was like, you know, guy's on hard times. He needs gas in his car. He needs $20. And so I gave him $20. I thought I was being a good Samaritan. And so I drive to work, and I do my show, and I didn't think a whole lot about the guy. And it must have been a month later, 3-4 weeks later, I was in the parking lot of a store just down the road, about a mile down the street, right down Sheridan. And I see the same guy. And he's walking around from person to person, and he's selling the same story. And I walk right up to the guy. And he gives me the same line. He needs $20 because his car's out of gas. And I'm like, I gave you $20 a month ago. Oh, I know you. I know you. Yeah, he immediately, his whole disposition and demeanor changed. And he awkwardly segued off. He was gone. And at that moment, I thought, you know, you're such a sucker, Seth. You're such a sucker. I thought I was doing good. I thought I was genuinely helping someone. And the truth was, I'd just been scammed by somebody who was going from person to person and pitching whatever. I was accosted by a guy in a parking lot in Oklahoma City a couple of years ago. He had a cancer bracelet on his arm. And if you look this up on Google, you'll find that it's a common scam. It's common enough to be written about. People will put a cancer bracelet on their arm and they walk up and they show you the bracelet. They say they have cancer and need money for bills and treatment. And that guy, he just scared the shit out of us. He just came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden he's brandishing this cancer bracelet and he's giving us a story. And we just, you know, I'm like, you cannot walk up to people like this. You know, I had my family with me. I chewed his ass and then we got in the car and we left, you know. But I mean, I fight that a little bit. Because in this world, honestly, it is difficult to know when you are being scammed and when you are stumbling across or running face first into a moment of genuine need. And I came to the opinion that I would rather be the guy who would run the risk of being taken advantage of than a person so cynical that he never helps anybody, that he always assumes the worst. I would rather be the kind of person who, if I see someone who's got the sign, who's like, please, I need help, or if someone's got a story, while vetting the story as best I can, while asking questions and checking, while doing whatever it is possible to make sure that I'm not being duped, I would rather be the kind of guy who runs the risk of getting it wrong, but still has a generous nature. Because the alternative is that you just shut off, you shut down. Everybody's lying. Everybody's scamming. Everybody's bilking you out of your money. Everybody is duplicitous. I don't want to be naive, but I don't want to be that cynical in my own life. And so that's kind of where I've come. We're driving along and we see on the corner, we see someone who's holding a sign, a little cardboard sign, and it says something like, jobless, need help, please help, whatever. This person has no gloves on their hands, none. And it's really freaking cold. And we drove by, and as we turned the corner, we're talking about it, Natalie and I, and we're like, I cannot believe these people are standing out here in this cold. And in the back of my mind, those two people are arguing, well, is this a better way to get paid if they stand out in the really cold weather? Are they more apt to have people like us give them money? I mean, the cynic is always trying to bust through. The other side is like, of course they wouldn't be standing out in the cold if they didn't genuinely need assistance. Another part of me is like, I wonder if they filled out a job application. I wonder if they've been out trying to participate in the real world. I ran the numbers at one point. I think if you make $300 a day is a six-figure income, tax-free. These are the types of exchanges going on in the back of my head. So anyway, we're driving along, but mostly I'm just grieved. God, there's someone standing out here in the middle of this really cold weather. And I think about, you know, these are problems I haven't had to worry about. And we're at the store, and so they have a big display, and it's insulated gloves. And they have those little hand warmers, the chemical hand warmers that last 12 hours. I don't know how they work, but they're really cool. I mean, you slide them into your gloves or in your pockets, and they keep your hands warm. So before you know it, we pick up a pair of these gloves, estimating size. We have no idea. I'm like, oh, it's kind of a larger person, big hands, thick hands. Were they thick hands? Were they long fingers? I couldn't tell. We were driving right by them. We pick up some gloves. We pick up some of these chemical hand warmer thingies, throw them in the cart with everything else. And we're driving back down and we're just going to give this stuff. Look, I can give you warm hands for Christmas. I can't take you home. I can't give you room in my house. There's so much I'm not able to do at this point in my life. I don't know you. I don't know your story. I don't know anything except at this moment, you have cold hands. Let me help. That's all I got, right? So we're driving up to give these gloves and hand warmers, and the person is gone. Natalie says, well, drive up and make a U-turn and come back. Maybe they're on the other side. So we drive up and we turn around and we come back, go under the bridge, nothing. We don't see anybody. Oh, maybe they went back to their car or their home. I'm guessing they had a home somewhere. So we make another U-turn to head back toward the highway to come back to the house. And whoa, wait a second. I see someone walking over on the left side on the other side of the traffic. They had apparently gone down a block and they were walking back to the original position. I'm in the wrong position to get to them. There's two rows of traffic going in two different directions. I can't get there. Go down and make another U-turn, Natalie says. We go under the bridge. We make another U-turn. We're coming back toward this person, ready to give them the gloves and the hand warmers. Okay. They cross the street. They're probably three blocks in front of us. We're watching this person in a coat, no gloves, just walk across the street under the middle sort of support column of the bridge and back to the other side. I can't get to them now. I drive back down another quarter mile, make another U-turn. This time we're just looking at each other going, what are we doing? We begin the trek again right toward this person who is now standing under the bridge. We have in our hands gloves and hand warmers, and we're watching. Is this person going to move? Are they going to cross the street again? Are they going to go somewhere else? The traffic's going to back up behind us, whatever. So we get closer and we get closer, we get closer, we get closer, and this person is standing right there with two other people. And I hit the hazard lights and I hit the brakes and we stop right next to him. And it turns out that he is a she. We roll down the window and she turns around and you can see the effect of the cold on her face. And Natalie reached out and handed her the gloves. And she told me, Seth, you do the talking. So I said, I pointed at her and I said, you, come here. And she came up to the window and I said, we noticed you don't have any gloves, anything to keep your hands warm. Take this. And Natalie gave her this bag, and inside the bag was the gloves and the hand warmers, and the traffic is stacking up behind us. My hazard lights are on. I mean, it's a week before Christmas, and we're on one of the busiest streets, a street leading to the mall, for Pete's sake. So there's cars everywhere. No one's honking at us yet. And we just gave the bag to her and said, look, warm up your hands. Take this. And her face just lit up. And she thanked us. And before I could even blink, the encounter was over. And the car was moving and we were driving back home. And it's been 2 days. And I'm still in conflict about it. Not because I think she was a scam artist. I mean, the look I saw was someone who was a person who was in need. Now, do you know? I don't know. I can't tell you for sure. But my impression was this was a person who was in the cold, they had less than so many others. And the reason that it's been on my mind so much is part of me thinks if I got off too easy. Don't congratulate yourself because you gave her a pair of, $10 gloves and some hand warmers. If she's standing out there in the middle of the street asking for donations, what if she has no job and can't get a job? What if her family busted apart and she had no education or no prospects or no opportunities? What if something else was going on? What if it's a health crisis? What if she didn't have a place to sleep? Did she sleep under that bridge? Was she sleeping in her car? Your mind starts to put all these things together and you think, what did you do really? You just gave her a pair of gloves. Then you go home and congratulate yourself. You're in a warm house. You're with loved ones. You have a safe place, a warm place to retreat to. Did you really do anything? Or did you just tell yourself you did? And then there's another part of me that thinks you do what you can where you can. And there are no little things. Maybe for this person, warm hands was enough of a gesture. Maybe this person will think about and talk about that encounter for years, for decades. I remember the time when I didn't have, gloves on my hands and a total stranger pulled up and they gave me in that way warmth. It sounds a little hokey, but is that a way to look at it? And I think I'll probably be in conflict about that for forever when I think about it. Seth, you should have picked her up and taken her home and you should have adopted her and you should have put her in your guest room and you should have done all this stuff. I don't know that I can do that. I don't know that I can put my family in that situation. I'm not prepared in my own life to do that for a host of reasons. I'm just not there. gloves and hand warmers. That was all I had at the moment. But, you know, maybe that's just a little taste of what the Christmas holiday should be, of what a humanist life should be, when we see these opportunities, both large and small, for us to try to do something positive for someone else, friend or stranger, and we take the opportunity. Maybe this is sort of my gateway into next time I will be better prepared to do more or to provide something else or to perhaps connect this person with another resource that I do not have. You know, sure, I didn't decorate my house for Christmas. Not one Christmas light in this whole freaking place. But on Christmas in 2016, I'm surrounded by love. And I'm going to try to make an effort in my own life whenever I can to find the opportunities to give warmth in some way to someone else. You know, whatever that is. Whatever it is. Might be gloves and hand warmers. It might be a kind word. It might be something else. Maybe that's what we're craving with our friends and families over the holiday season. Just warmth and kind gestures. Imagine what our world might be if we could all focus even more on those things, warmth and kind gestures. Not assuming the worst, not always being a cynic, trying whenever we can to try to help somebody else, and even when we wonder if that's enough and knowing it wasn't, maybe it's a step toward better, bigger, and more wonderful things. Anyway, that's just a story of an encounter in my own life a couple of days ago that I'd think about her. I think about those $10 gloves, you know? Using it as an opportunity to perhaps reflect on what all this is about. I don't know. I appreciate you so much for listening today. I hope the holiday is good for you. Next Tuesday, we're going to wrap up the year together. And thank goodness. I don't know about you, I'm ready for 2016 to be done. I think I said it last year, but 2016 just been an ass kicker. It is time to be done. We're going to recap 2016, the biggest, the best, the brightest, the worst, the wildest, the weirdest. It's going to be a great show next week. Have a wonderful Christmas, and I will see you soon. Take care.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.